The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this October 28th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on another chilly, gloomy day in the Auburn Opelika area. And I don't know if that's just the weather or if it's deeper than that. I'll let you determine how you want to feel on this Tuesday afternoon. We are zooming down the last week of October. November 1 is Saturday. Hard to believe that the football season is basically two-thirds of the way done. That's wild to think about. And so lots to get to on today's show. We'll get to that in a second. Christian, happy Tuesday to you. Yeah. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday.
Yeah. How was your birthday yesterday?
It was solid. It was day one of 25 today. So welcome. Half the midlife crisis, I guess you could say. So I woke up and bought a Camaro just because I felt like I needed to feel something in life.
Yeah. And but we're 25, so we can't afford it. So you took out a huge line of credit, put yourself in serious
debt. I'm at
debt.
The Hot Wheel. Yeah.
$299.
There we go. Yeah. Goodwill had a nice driver on sale in the back that I went and bought. No, just playing. But no, it was a good birthday. And thank you for asking and for yesterday as well. But yes. Happy Tuesday. It is Happy Tuesday, man. You're feeling more like fall each and every day, and you mentioned how fast everything is going, man. I know you felt it last Friday. I now get to feel it this Friday of the regular season finale of high school sports, and we get to talk with Coach Buster Daniel, the head football coach of Lee Scott Academy, here coming up in just a little bit at 2:30. About that, does the Warriors take on Real Town following a 36-8 win over the Tigers of B.B. Comer, so we'll talk a lot about that. What the game means on Friday, what possibly it may not mean, and again, just how important it is to continue to state that Lee Scott, in only the second year in the AHSAA, is not only playing in the Alabama High School Athletic Association state playoffs, but hosting the first round of the playoffs. So really, really important. We're going to talk a lot about that at 2:30, but we're starting off the show talking about just the serious conversations, right? You feel like the fan base is split. There's the yes factor, the no factor. We're kind of going to tell you everything of why there's a fence. Basically, every single explanation, every single possibility of the reality of what is happening, what could happen in the future. Also, some conversations in the SEC just on the coaching side of things and some quarterback conversations in there as well.
Yeah, and so that's where we begin today's show. More talks from Auburn, Arkansas, kind of looking ahead and what the rest of the season holds and what the program's trying to do. And as always, we do want to get your thoughts on today's show. Phone lines are open if you want to be a part of it. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. Give us a call. Your thoughts on where the program is right now for Auburn football. Which side of the fence are you on? Are you still trying to decide which side is greener, right? Which side do you want to plant your flag on? And not that this is a civil war type of thing, but I just think people have different opinions. How many did we hear yesterday, right, from different callers and texters who maybe had the same general idea, but their reasoning was different or had two completely separate ideas and separate reasonings, right? That's what we want to dig into today, because Auburn football is at a crossroads here. They're at a crossroads internally and externally. What I mean by that, and the text box is open as well, 334-784-1067. Auburn football's at a crossroads because it's trying to figure out what its next move is, which is wild to say when you still have an active head football coach. But clearly, something needs to happen, right? I think most people can agree with that. We're not talking about hiring or firing or making major changes. Maybe that's an option, right? But I think most people can agree you can't keep going the way you're going and expect it all to just be okay. I think some people are in that camp, and that's totally fine. But my opinion is something needs to change one way or the other, right? But what that change is and what those changes are is where everybody has their own opinions.
Yeah, and it's weird because, again, you're at that crossroad now to where there would be different conversations and a bunch of people swaying on one side of the fence based off of if the result was different on Saturday, right? Now you beat Arkansas, you get your first conference win, and now you're at the point of, okay, how can you respond again? Right now you're back at home. Now you're back in Jordan-Hare, back in a night game inside Jordan-Hare, which again we continue to talk about of, man, what this season could have been. And it hurts to think of it like that, but just based off of the night games that you basically pray for every single season, you've already been gifted three of them at home, four of them if you include the Ball State game in there as well. But yeah, now you're at the point of you feel like it's not legitimate to have true conversations on replacements or on firings of whether that's the head coach or whether that's different coordinators or position guys. You're really at a wait and see based off of what happens against Kentucky or possibly later on throughout the season. And that's why that win conflicted the fan base even more so, because it made it to where half the fan base felt as if you're just digging your feet in the sand, waiting for the inevitable reality, while the other are at the fans of, or the standpoint of, look at how the players responded. Look at the locker room. Look at Freeze on the interview afterwards and just the relief that you could see on his face. See now if that can be that leapfrog game to kind of spring forward you into the back half of this season and possibly into 2026 as well.
And those are the internal crossroads,
yes,
right? Then you zoom out and you look at the external crossroads. The reason that Auburn is in this position externally is because of what's happening at other SEC schools, what's happening at other P4 schools. Guys like James Franklin and Brian Kelly and Billy Napier, Sam Pittman losing their jobs. Sure, those are all different situations, but when you start talking about firing a guy like Brian Kelly, who has a better winning record at LSU than Hugh Freeze does at Auburn in the same amount of time, that's pretty scary. That's pretty wild, right? Kelly was winning big games, had his team competing. I know this year hasn't gone the way they wanted it to. And clearly, right, clearly LSU had in the back of their minds, this was the year. This was their that's the term I keep going back to is litmus test.
Yeah, well, you were at the point for LSU of you were at the Auburn standpoint plus another year, right? Because you were, I believe it was 10-3, or 10-2, 10-2, 9-3, and now you're staring down the barrel of another 9-3, if not an 8-4 season if you win out, to where they were at the extreme of what Auburn is feeling right now. They were basically in between Auburn and Penn State with James Franklin, right? I mean, we had the conversations off air of how Brian Kelly and Penn State were somewhat comparable just because of Penn State threw everything at James Franklin for this season, said, okay, we're bringing everybody back. You're going and getting your quarterback. We're hitting the portal a little bit. We're extending and giving a raise or bringing in new different coaches with Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator, who is supposed to be the best in the entire country. This is your year. It has to be your year. Down south in Baton Rouge, you kind of felt the same thing. Garrett Nussmeier returned. Brian Kelly brought everybody that he could from the portal to not be depth pieces, but to be starters, but to be stars, to compete for a college football playoff, not to just hope to make a spot, but to make noise, to host, to get a first round bye, and to win a national championship. And for Nussmeier, a Heisman Trophy was in there as well. I mean, one of the top three odds to start the season on the college football side of things when you're looking in terms of betting of winning a Heisman Trophy. Look where he's at now. I couldn't even tell you if he has a true number next to his name, but they both of those programs got to the point of, okay, this was the everything year. LSU realizes that next year is going to be a little bit more of a rebuild for the Tigers. Not as much as it used to be because of NIL and because of the transfer portal, but when you're looking at the amount of seniors that are on that team, the amount of kids that they brought in for 1 year to try and win a national championship, and eight games in, you're 5-3, and you see the program not going to be in that right direction on Sunday morning or even Saturday night. Again, we heard talks that they were not planning on having those discussions at all going into the game at home against A&M. But because of how bad Marcel Reed made that defense look, and because the offense just continued to stutter, Saturday night started those conversations of, okay, it might not happen this year, but let's look ahead. If we're going to be in a little bit of a rebuild, is this the guy we trust to bring in the guys that in 2-3 years you can get back to that point? And ultimately they said no.
Yeah, and so that's the external pressure that has been put on Auburn's situation and really has magnified all of this, because you have fans now who wear the orange and blue who are saying, well, if James Franklin can lose his job at Penn State or Brian Kelly can lose his job at LSU, what makes Hugh Freeze safe at Auburn? There are fans that are saying that. But there are also fans who are saying, well, James Franklin was in Happy Valley for 12 years. That's a little bit of a different story. Hugh Freeze is in the middle of year three. Brian Kelly was an extra year ahead, right? He had the extra year and went backwards every year. And we know the narrative of, what, the last three LSU head football coaches had won a national title within the first 3 years, 3 or 4 years, right? Nick Saban, Les Miles, Ed Orgeron. That's the standard that Brian Kelly was held to. He didn't get it done. They got embarrassed at home, and they decided to move on. And they're still talking about whatever his buyout is going to be.
Yeah, there's reports that he walked into the meeting room on Sunday, or attempted to, and it's that meme of like the Bills player that walked in and his card wasn't
the card
scanning.
Won't work, yeah.
They were saying that his passcode wasn't working, and he couldn't get in.
God.
On Sunday morning, and that was when you had those conversations where the staffers were told to go home because they didn't know the legitimate future of their head coach.
Yeah, that's wild. But with all of that happening, right, in Florida firing Billy Napier for not winning games, that speaks volumes, right? It's impossible to not see that and hear that and start to play the comparison game. But I know fans are frustrated, and even from the ones we heard from yesterday, the ones who are backing this coach and this coaching staff and this organization and this regime and everybody involved with Auburn football, you can still tell, I think, they're not pleased with what's happening, but there are fans who are still hopeful. But the side that's not hopeful, right, the side that does want change, whatever that looks like, that's growing by the day. And what's so wild is what we've talked about is even a win over Arkansas didn't really change a whole lot, because you dive deep into the numbers, as we did yesterday, and I'm sure we will again today, the same problems are still there. The Arkansas game, for me personally, just speaking as myself here, didn't change my opinion at all. Not at all. Other than telling me the defense is even better than I thought it was, and DJ Durkin probably deserves $5 million instead of 2.5, okay? And the defense that has kept you in games all year long had to go win you the game, which is not their job, but they did it anyway, right? We talked about special teams and how awesome it was to see McPherson do what he did. He single-handedly won you that game as well. But a win over a 2-5 Arkansas team with an interim head coach where your offense scores a touchdown, that doesn't change my mind.
Again, a scripted drive.
the opening drive. Correct. And now we're in the conversations of which quarterback should start. And we're not going to commit to a quarterback, whether that's, I don't know, gamesmanship or lack of confidence, or maybe it's just, I don't know. Maybe they just don't know. But all of that starts to really boil over for me and really start to heat up. And I hate that that's the case, right? And now you return home this weekend for a night game against a terrible Kentucky team that's actually played okay. They've played all right.
Offensively.
Offensively, where your defense should play well. But here we are again in a situation, and we'll get to this as the week goes along. It's like, are we going into this game with the same mentality we went into the Arkansas game? Where if you win, you survive, but if you lose, your job is done. Right? I don't want to be there. That's a toxic way to think, man. That's not a healthy way to live, to coach, to play. Right? And so there's a lot of fans that are starting to get to that point. And fans that are, that's almost like the middle gray area is yeah. what it seems like. You've got a lot of fans in that pocket, then you've got fans on each extreme. Some that say, nope, let's stick it out. It's going to be fine. And you've got others that are saying, we're done, get them out, we're over it.
Yeah, it's like you're at recess back in the day playing Foursquare, right? There's two people on each side, and although you're on the same spot, your opinion may be different than this person's opinion while you're still in that same camp. And how many times do you have that gray area of, no, the ball didn't bounce on the line. It was on your square and not my square. And it is. It's a very frustrating spot to be because you want to believe that there's a rally. You want to believe that you get to the point of a two-win stretch can work your way into possibly three on the road at Vanderbilt and then four at Mercer. And then all of a sudden you're playing for everything again in the Iron Bowl where it may not be spoken, but it could get back to coaching for your job just from the standpoint of we talked about it. 8-4 looks different than 7-5 does, but 8-4 could only be acceptable to some people if you beat one of your rivals. 8-4 at the beginning of the season looked so different than it did, but it goes back to what we had talked about all during the four-game stretch and then the bye week that was in there as well, and then following that of how much credit do you give to Arkansas or for Auburn for beating a really bad Arkansas team and a Kentucky team that's 2-5, 0-5 in the SEC. It's 0-10 combined in the SEC, especially when the fact that where people stand is their frustration is on one side of the ball, and that's where the head coach, Hugh Freeze, puts all of his marbles when it comes to play calling.
Yeah, I think that's a huge point. I think that's a really, really good point where if it was the opposite, right? And we said that coming into the year, right? What if Auburn
Auburn's offense was fantastic, yeah, but the defense was terrible? Yeah. Nobody would be putting blame the way that it is.
No, it would be a different feeling, yes, right? If it was like, gosh, man, we went on the road to Texas A&M and it looked like the A&M Notre Dame score 41-40 or something. It's like, gosh, man, we're right there.
If we just got that one stop.
Yeah. When's the last time Auburn fans have had to say that? When's the last time Auburn fans have had the luxury of sitting after a loss on a Monday and saying, man, all you needed was one stop because your offense performed the way that it should have?
It was just get a stop so that way the offense can get back onto the field.
Or just get a stop for the win.
Yeah.
The one that comes to mind for me is 4th-and-31. That's what comes to my mind. That's the one where you needed a stop to win the game. That's the last one that I can remember. But I can remember dozens and dozens and dozens of times, not just in the Freeze era, but Harsin era, end of the Malzahn era, where it was like, God, if we could just score one more time, you could have won that football game. And that's where the frustrations are. But your point is fantastic. It's the idea that the man in charge is also in charge of the side of the ball that's still struggling. And it struggled again on Saturday against one of the worst defenses in the country. If Auburn had gone out and put up 60 on Saturday, we may feel different. But that didn't happen. And that's why there's a lot of gray area in the fan base right now, even after a win. And some say it's not fair, and I get your point. But there's still a lot to be proven, especially with a game this weekend against Kentucky, where Auburn is favored by 10.5 points right now. That's pretty wild to think about, is it not? Tigers favored by 10.5 points against the Wildcats at home this weekend.
With the over-under at 44.5.
That's disgusting. That's disgusting. That should tell you all you need to know, that the boys in Vegas think Auburn is going to win this game by double digits, but the teams combined will not score more than 45 points. I don't know if that says more about Auburn's offense or just Kentucky's team or Auburn's defense or just all of it together, because that's how they do it in terms of betting on games. So speaking of that Auburn offense that is just bound to get better, who is going to be leading that offense? Who's going to be running that offense? And will we learn between now and Saturday who that starting quarterback will be? We'll talk about that next as we're just underway here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And phone lines are open for the next few minutes, 334-321-1390. Christian's about to sit down with Buster Daniel, the head coach of Lee Scott Academy Football. That'll be coming up at 2:30 and then a wide open hour number two. But reports from practice today for Auburn football is that Ashton Daniels was taking most of the reps with the ones, but Hugh Freeze said yesterday several times he will not name a starter for this weekend. Competition is what we have on the plains. Is it Ashton Daniels or is it Jackson Arnold? And I feel like the more you look at it and think about it, gamesmanship is what's happening here, right? Why give Kentucky the opportunity to prepare for one quarterback over the other when you could pretty much keep it up in the air and make them prepare for both? Which I know that happens all the time, and we say that all the time, but this one feels 50-50.
Like, frustratingly enough,
yeah,
feels wide open.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, how many times do we see it where it's like, well, we're going to have a competition this week, and it's not so-and-so's job, but it's like a heavy lean to one guy versus the other, or injuries or things like that? I think this one really is a coin toss right now. And Freeze leaves it up, or at least what he said yesterday, is he's leaving it up to how they look in practice this week, which,
take that for what you will.
I'll hold my words on that for what I believe and think on that for a moment. But what's the right decision, Christian? Based off what you saw last weekend in Arkansas, based off what we've seen all season long, and the potential of the rest of the season, what's your answer? Who should start this Saturday? Is it Ashton Daniels? If you are Hugh Freeze, if you are Derek Nix, if you are Ken Austin, and you have the final say, even if you're not ready to make that call right now, which one are you making an argument for?
I'm making an argument for the way that you saw a team rally. And there was a word that was used all last week that is a spark. And I do truly believe that although it resulted in a lot of threes, and a lot of those were in thanks to the defense putting you in good field position, I saw crisp and I saw a confidence with Ashton that it could be a little bit of ignorance just because he hasn't seen the field and he haven't seen those mistakes yet, but he's played so many years of really, really good football. I really did like what I saw from him in the few times that he dropped back in the pocket. We go back and you highlight the throws to Perry and the ball to Eric Singleton over the middle of the field, and it's ones that you just feel like haven't either haven't been taken or haven't truly been run at least not looked at. And yes, there was the missed touchdown to Malcolm Simmons over the middle of the field when the pressure came to that side, and you're supposed to look there for the pressure release, and it got flushed on the backfield again, had to settle for a field goal. But the biggest reason that I say Ashton is the conversation that we had yesterday of whether that's the way the fan base feels with Hugh Freeze, which we've had a lot of people have those conversations about, or it's the quarterback spot and you are Hugh Freeze. If you put Jackson Arnold on the field, and again, if he does take the field, if you do hear his name in the starting lineups, I will not be upset. But the last thing that can happen, the worst thing that can happen for either one of these quarterbacks and for Coach Freeze, is he runs Jackson Arnold onto the field and he looks good for two drives and then makes a wrong read from a read that was in his helmet, like what you saw on Saturday of, all right, you're reading this right end. If he bites with Jeremiah, you're throwing the hitch routes, which is exactly what Jackson did, and I guarantee that was what was told in his helmet because he had his back towards, I believe it was Perry or maybe Cam on the read. If you put Jackson on the field, but Ashton has his helmet there the entire time, you are waiting for Jackson Arnold to make a mistake. And that's very toxic. That's a very incorrect way of going about it. If your decision's been made and there's question marks, that needs to be your answer.
Wouldn't be the first time an Auburn quarterback has had to look over their shoulder when they start a football game in the SEC, and we've seen how that's gone in the past on the Plains. We'll talk more about that as we go, but we'll talk some high school football when we come back as Christian sits down with Buster Daniel, the head coach of the Lee Scott Academy Warriors.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
We're 30 minutes into the Tuesday edition of On the Line, and we get to continue our Lee Scott Academy football segments. And joining us here now is the head coach of the Lee Scott Warriors, Coach Buster Daniel. Coach, we appreciate your time. Thanks for being here, and thanks for taking the time to catch up with us once again here today. We made a couple jokes a couple of weeks ago about being halfway through the season. How wild is it now that this Friday night will conclude the 10-game regular season?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to believe. I think I said a couple of weeks ago, it feels like we just got started, and yeah, it does. You know, but once you get started and you get into the routine, man, the season just flies by. And it seems like the older I get, the faster it goes. But it's really hard to believe it's game 10 already.
Well, Coach, you're coming off that 36-8 win over B.B. Comer. It felt like the group really started to look like themselves again, a little bit more rhythm, more physicality, more energy, especially in the offensive side of the football. What stood out to you most about how your guys responded on Friday night?
Well, you know, it was the thing we went back to work on last week of blocking assignments and each and every guy on the offensive side of the ball doing their job. And it showed Friday night that we got back to doing that. Now, let's just be real. B.B. Comer's down a little bit. They had a couple of injuries to key players. But, you know, it doesn't matter who you play. If you don't block well, they're going to tackle you. So our guys did a lot better job of doing, you know, blocking their assignments and taking care of their jobs. And I was proud of that. We got a fast start, and that's what we were looking for.
Every week obviously brings new opponents and new wrinkles from your standpoint and just from a coaching standpoint as a whole. How do you and your staff go about making those adjustments and the right approach without losing sight of what your team is able to do best?
Well, you know, it's again, you're in a routine that, you know, it doesn't change really from week to week. From an offensive standpoint, you just see a different front on defense. You know, there's only so many things they can do. I mean, only so many coverages they can run. So, you know, we have seen about everything we could possibly face this year. I mean, with different teams each and every week. So, you know, it's all about preparation and really looking at the front and what they're giving us and blocking schemes to fit that front each and every week.
This week, again, a little bit different just based off how the schedule was implemented. Another game that doesn't necessarily impact playoff standings but still carries a lot of weight going into the postseason. How do you manage keeping the guys healthy while still making sure that you have your edge and that competitive momentum as you work your way into the postseason?
Yeah, you know, it's a big game for us. I mean, you know, Real Town is an outstanding football team. They are each and every year, very physical. Really, really good football team. We're good athletes. You know, you can't go into games and worry about getting injured. You know, you would love to come out injury-free. I think that's every coach's goal. But at the same time, you're going to try to win the ball game if you're any kind of program. And that's what we try to do each and every week. So, you know, we keep our fingers crossed and nobody gets hurt. But, you know, most of the time when you get injured is when you're not going hard. So we plan to go into this game full speed and, you know, and play the best game we can play, you know. Win or lose, we want to come out injury free, you know, because we got the playoffs the following week. So, but we can't go in with the idea that we don't want to get hurt and not play real hard.
We're sitting down here with Coach Buster Daniel, head coach of the Lee Scott Academy Warriors. Coach, in your experience, what's the key to finishing a season strong? Again, whether that be tough losses in the middle of the season or just making sure that you're still able to stack that momentum. How do you mentally and physically, emotionally reset for every single week to come?
Well, you know, that's just being a competitor, whether it's coaches or players. You know, they want to compete each and every week. And, you know, sometimes you mentioned a loss during a season. Sometimes it takes that to refocus a football team or baseball team, whatever it is. You know, and I think we've had that. We went a three-week stretch where we didn't play particularly well. We were fortunate to come out with a win against Dable. And then, you know, we lost against Wadley, which was a really, really good football team. And then we didn't play well against a good Glenwood team and come out on the short end of that. So, you know, I think we bounced back last week and showed that we can still play this game if we do things the right way. So, you know, just being a competitor, I think, will bring out the best in everyone.
You've talked all year about execution, identity, and just taking care of Lee Scott Academy football. As you turn towards the playoff season, what are some of the biggest things that you want to see, whether that be cleaned up from week to week or fine-tuned here coming up into Friday night as the games really start to matter?
Yeah, you know, I think we talked last week about the silly penalties.
Yeah.
And, you know, this past Friday night, we didn't have any of those. You're going to have penalties throughout the game, whether it's holding or, you know, pass interference. You're going to have some plays that kids try to make and you get penalized for it. But we did a better job with the silly penalties, which are, you know, before the whistle, after the whistle, just silly personal fouls. We did a better job of that this past week. And, you know, that's key. You know, when you play in good football teams and when you start playoffs, all teams are good. They made the playoffs, so they're a good football team. So you can't afford to give them any yardage without making them earn it. So that's the biggest thing I was pleased with Friday night is we cleaned that area up. And, you know, just got to be a little more physical. And, you know, each and every week you got a team that's going to be physical, so you got to match that. So, you know, cleaning up penalties and just being physical is the biggest thing we're looking for.
Coach Buster Daniel, head coach of the Lee Scott Warriors, joining us here on ESPN 106.7. Looking ahead, before we dive into Real Town in specifics, what's the biggest message possibly at practice or just in the locker room after Friday nights that you want your team to take with them to Notasoga to take on the Rebels of Real Town here on Friday night?
Well, just, you know, again, just do your job. You know, can't worry about your guy beside you. You expect him to do his, but now you do your job. And do it 100% and play hard every snap. Between the whistles, do everything you can do to make your team successful. And so that's the biggest thing, man. We just got to work on us and take care of the little things, take care of the football, tackle better. And, you know, I think we'll be fine if we do all those things.
And again, finally, you close the regular season, Lee Scott Academy 7-2 currently, but this Friday night taking on a really tough Real Town team. What kind of challenge were they going to present to this Lee Scott team, and what is your message to the guys as they gear up?
Yeah, I mean, the Real Town is the record, you know, it speaks for itself. They lost, I think, to two really good football teams. They're extremely talented. You know, maybe not so much as last year. They lost to some key guys last year, seniors. But they still have an outstanding quarterback that's a tremendous athlete. They got five or six guys on the offensive side of the ball with him at, you know, different times that are also great athletes. And you know, they're just physical. That's the thing. They're big, physical, tough kids, and they play hard. They play the game the right way. And, you know, we got our hands full. I mean, I'm just being honest with you. It's hard to hem up one athlete on the field, and then when you got four or five out there at one time, it's really hard. Defensively, they're not huge. They're not as big as they were last year. But again, they're loaded with athletes, the guys that can run, and that poses a challenge for our offensive line, you know, because if you duck your head or you miss them, you know, one little key block, those guys are making plays in the backfield. So we got our hands full. It's a really, really good football team. Probably not the kind of team you want to play right before playoffs, but it's a great challenge for us. It's, you know, and we just got to prove that we can play with those guys. You know, last year they came in here to our place and pretty much handed it to us. So we want to get a little revenge this year. Win or lose, we're still in the playoffs, but we want to come out healthy. But it's going to be a great football game, great atmosphere, and, you know, it's the kind of game you want to go watch.
Yeah, you mentioned last year this was the game that Lee Scott had to play for their playoff lives just because of the region standings, making it all the way down, the tiebreakers. And so, yeah, is there a little bit of revenge again with these juniors that were last year, now seniors? Is there a little bit more of that revenge, trying to do what you can, knowing that the game ultimately doesn't matter anything more than that word that we used a lot of last week, which is simply pride?
Yeah, you know, it's good going into a game that you can just relax and play. You can play loose. You don't have to, you know, there's no pressure. Of course, we want to win the football game, sure. But win or lose is not going to affect our season. We got playoffs coming up, and that's the biggest thing for us, you know, this year is number one, hosting a playoff game. Being in the playoffs is number one. But getting to host and, you know, being home for HSA playoff is big for our kids, our school, and our community. So, you know, we can go in this game Friday night and just relax and play the game the way it's supposed to be played and, you know, let the score fall where it wants to. And but as long as we play well and do things the right way, you know, we can live with the outcome.
Coach, we appreciate your time. As always, again, Lee Scott Academy and Real Town in the regular season finale this Friday night. Pre-game coverage starts at 6:30 with kickoff at 7 over on AU 100.3, AUHits.com, and the Radio Alabama app. Myself and my color commentator, Rhett Crome, will be on the call, bringing you all of the action from Notasulga, Alabama, again, in the regular season finale for the Lee Scott Warriors. But you mentioned it, Coach. We get to be back at home here in 2 weeks at Judd Scott Field, and we're looking forward to it, but looking forward to talking again with you next Tuesday, hopefully after a big win, as we get to preview the AHSAA playoffs.
Yep, sounds good, man. I'm looking forward to it, and like I said, we'll be back here next week, and we'll see what happens after that, because, you know, everybody is 0-0. It's win or go home, so we got to prepare each and every week and play our best during the playoffs.
Yes, sir. Appreciate your time. Good luck on Friday night, and go Warriors.
Thanks so much. Go Warriors.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
We are back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Thanks to head coach Buster Daniel of Lee Scott Academy Football, sitting down talking a little ball with Christian a little bit ago. And the Warriors are playoff bound for the first time in the AHSAA. I know you guys were sad last year in what was a roller coaster of emotions, right, where you thought you made it. Told you didn't make it, then you had a game to get up for and just couldn't pull it out there at the end a year ago, so you missed the playoffs, but you're in it now. And you'll be playing back home at Judd Scott Field in a couple of weeks, but you have your regular season finale coming up against Real Town on Friday.
Yeah, we do. It was a really – it's a weird circle of events because it was Real Town last year again, just basically keeping the opponents the same but flipping – home and away. Again, you're playing Real Town as the non-region finale, and after beating B.B. Comer last year, yeah, we're told that it was a win and you're in, and Lee Scott was able to get the job done, get the win. Everybody celebrated on the field. I had the whole playoff call broadcast ready, and Monday came around, and you figured out that the tiebreaker had to work its way all the way down to like letter R to realize that it went into your non-region points allowed and scored and everything, and it went down to Lee Scott needed to beat Real Town, and with Real Town being a really, really good team, and then with Lee Scott, kind of that weird emotional hangover. You could just see it on the field where they put all of their cards out, man, to win that game last year, to make the playoffs, and ultimately weren't able to get it done. But yeah, this year, how nice is it to have a game against Real Town on the road that you can't say if you're the coach or you're the players, but we can talk about it on here and say that in terms of any of the drama from last year, it does not matter what happens this year. So, yeah, Lee Scott Academy and the Rebels of Real Town over on AU 100.3 on Friday evening. We will go live. We, as in myself and my color commentator, Rhett Crome, will go live for the pregame at 6:30. We'll break down the entire regular season. Again, as this is the regular season finale. We'll do a little bit of a playoff conversation that we're about to have as well before diving into everything that you need to know before the game. But again, pregame at 6:30 with kickoff at 7 over on AU 100.3, auhits.com, and the Radio Alabama app.
Yeah, and then in terms of playoffs, right, we know where Lee Scott's going to be for 3A. We know where Auburn High is going to be for 7A. I know the other side of your guys' bracket is still being finalized. There's, what, one more region to be fully decided, right?
Yeah, there's a 4 seed for Region 8, which is between...
Or a 4-way tie.
No. So just the 4th seed for Region 8 is between Holly Pond and Whitesburg Christian. But Region 6 is the one that is pretty wild, as every team is competing 1, 2, 3, and 4. So those four teams are guaranteed to make the playoffs. But Piedmont, Westbrook Christian, Glencoe, and Walter Wellborn, all of those teams, I think 4 can go all the way to 2, 3 can go to 1, and you could see a lot of drama, or you could see no drama. But again, yeah, that's all on the other side of the bracket. When you're looking at the left side, again, we know and have known for a couple weeks now, Lee Scott Academy again at home at Judd Scott Field. We will take on Hale County in round 1, and then we are matched up with Montgomery Academy and Flomaton. Flomaton makes their way to MA. And so that guarantees, basically, with the travel one way or another, Lee Scott, if they were to make it, will be on the road in round 2. I know Auburn's Lee Scott and Auburn are in very similar situations from the standpoint of the 2 seed then having to travel just because of AHSAA rules. Even if Flomaton beats MA, with Lee Scott being the higher seed, Lee Scott would then travel basically down to Florida, which could be fun, I guess, if you want to say it that way. But Lee Scott taking on Hale County on the bottom left side of the brackets. You're also in there with Bayside Academy, Houston Academy, Thorsby, and Randolph County in there as well.
Yeah, and so for Auburn High, you mentioned it, very similar situation. Tigers are the 2 seed coming out of Region 2 after Central won the region. Auburn is the 2 seed. You had Carver as the 3 seed, and Opelika snuck their way in as the 4 seed. Auburn will host the first round of the playoffs at Duck Sanford Stadium, and Auburn High fans are trying to decide how they feel about this, a rematch with Vestavia Hills. And if you don't remember how that game went down, maybe you blocked it out of your memory like I did. Auburn went to Vestavia.
Yeah, rematch? What do you mean? This is...
Yeah, but we have not seen this team at all this year. Auburn went to Vestavia on a Thursday night, second game of the year, and it didn't go well. Just didn't go well. Vestavia jumped out 21-0 before you could blink. They win this game 42-14. It was over really before it ever got started. And so that was in the midst of a weird start to the season. You played Booker out of the gate, Thursday night game against Vestavia, Thursday night game against Opelika. So we have moved on and forgotten about that, but the Tigers have a chance at redemption. They will host Vestavia Hills at Duck Sanford Stadium next Friday. On the 7th of November, so really excited for that. We're off this week. Our regular season is done. We're on a bye week this week, and we prepare for Vestavia Hills next Friday at Duck Sanford Stadium. But here's what's nice. When you zoom out and look at the entire 7A bracket, on Auburn's side, on the right-hand side, you've got teams like Auburn, Vestavia, Baker, Florence, Hewitt, Opelika, Sparkman, and Daphne. Solid teams, right? But the thing is, you look to the other side of the bracket, and it's pretty brutal. James Clemens and Fairhope, Mary Montgomery and Austin. All right, cool. How about these first round matchups? Carver Montgomery is going to go to Thompson, a matchup that is a rematch from the regular season. They played, I think it was either the opener or the second game of the season. And Hoover, which may be the hottest team in the state, heads to Central Phoenix City for a first-round matchup. So, your Auburn High Tigers avoided Thompson, Carver, Hoover, and Central because they're all on the other side of the bracket. Remarkable to look at.
Thompson beat Carver Montgomery at home to start the season 37-6.
Carver was up 6-0 in that game, nearing halftime, I believe, and then Thompson obviously unloaded on the second half. But Auburn's path to a state championship game, Auburn High. You host Vestavia Hills. If you win, if you win, you are guaranteed to travel. That's how the two-seat is. It's stupid, but it is what it is. You either travel to Daphne, which is down near Mobile, about 3 hours and 20 minutes, or you go north to Sparkman, which is about 3 hours and 45 minutes. They are the winner of Region 4. I don't think that's how it should be, but there was a lot of drama there, and it finally got settled yesterday. So Auburn has to play Vestavia. If you win, you either go north to Sparkman or you go south to Daphne, and then it's kind of up in the air. You could play in the semifinals Baker or Florence. You could go to Hewitt Trustful, or there is a possibility, Christian, where if Auburn and Opelika win their games, the Auburn High Tigers could host the Opelika Bulldogs at Duck Sanford Stadium in the state semis with a trip to the state championship game up for grabs. Could you imagine? And there's a chance where Lee Scott and Glenwood could do the same thing, but I believe
it would be,
Yeah, you guys would have to go to them. But that would be awesome, too. The fact that the two big rivals in this area could go at each other for a trip to the state championship game, pretty remarkable when you look at it. So, more high school football coverage at the end of this week and into next week when the postseason gets started. But hour number one is in the books. Stick around. Lots more college football talk coming up in hour number two. Who's good? Who's not? Who's making the college football playoff? And which coach is going to get fired this week? We'll talk about that and more when hour number two starts next.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us as we get underway here in hour number two. If you missed any of the first hour of today's show, you can go back and listen to the podcast version of it in the podcast center on our station website at ESPNAU.com. In hour number one, we talked about the gray area that a lot of Auburn football fans seem to be in right now. What should Auburn do moving forward with the program? Following a win over Arkansas, you're favored by 10.5 points against Kentucky. There's a quarterback battle going on as well. All of that was in hour number one. Plus, we talked some high school football as Christian spoke with the head coach of Lee Scott Academy football, Buster Daniel. We also went through our respective playoff brackets for 3A and 7A for Lee Scott and Auburn High. So all of that was in hour number one. If you missed it, go check it out on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we get to take our first look around in the SEC in the top 25 games, top 25. We have, according to Jacob, six or seven games that we want to dive into. I was trying to get the reaction.
It's not funny.
No.
It's not funny.
No. I turned 25, so I don't even know what it means in it, ever. Not that anybody does.
Yeah, but, boomer.
Yeah. No, but we have our games that we want to be able to dive into talk a little bit about just the games around the SEC, around the top 25, maybe some other big impactful games in there as well. Before we take a look at the playoff picture and the teams that are projected by conference to make the college football playoff, we say goodbye to a couple of teams in there as well. But how many does the SEC have projected? The ACC, the Big Ten, the Big 12, and maybe the G5 and the independent level as well. We're going to dive into all of that before we talk a little bit more about the head coaching vacancies and how the record was officially set for the most head coaches fired before October, which was previously set only in 2022. But year of 2025, why not set every single record possible? But again, all of that coming up here in hour number two.
Yep, and phone lines are open the entire hour, so if you want to be a part of the show, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. If you want to hop in on just the general college football conversation, the SEC, who do you think is going to make the playoffs? Who do you think is going to win the national title as of right now, as we are approaching the final month of the regular season? You can give us a call at 334-321-1390, or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. Let's get to the phone lines to start the second hour of today's show. Lonnie down in Lochapoca, what's up, brother? 2 days in a row, huh?
Yeah, I didn't get to listen to the first hour, but I really just wanted to address a few of the things that were said. After I called in yesterday, you guys had a lot of callers yesterday, so that was good.
Yes.
But, you know, a few of the callers, well, there was particularly one, I can't remember who it was talking about, you know, how they were tired of the coaching carousel at Auburn and everybody doesn't need to be so negative and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I can appreciate that stance. I can. It does make sense. Particularly in a year like this year where it looks like there's going to be a lot of openings. But the point that I wanted to really make, and I didn't call back in to make it because you guys pretty much made it for me. Let's say that we hang on to Hugh Freeze. Number one, is he going to give up play calling duties? He probably would, but are you going to be confident that he's not meddling? I'm not, okay? The second thing is, what competent offensive coordinator is going to want to come into a situation where they know they've basically got 1 year to fix a complete cluster, you know what?
Mm-hmm. With the former coach still there breathing down your neck.
Right. So if there are people that have concerns about, you know, hiring and firing and hiring and firing, then there's a simple solution for that. And I'm just as fine with this one as I am. You know, you guys know I'm a big John Summerall fan, but I would be fine with promoting Durkin. And, you know, he's obviously been at Auburn a little while. Great pedigree. I know what he did at Maryland was not great, but I don't think you can really include that given the circumstances. I mean, I think that's the way that you go, and it's not a true carousel as it was described yesterday. So I wanted you guys to talk about that a little bit. And like I said, you made my point for me, but some of those same people that called in yesterday, please call and explain how we're going to be able to get a competent offensive coordinator if we force Q to give up play calling with basically 1 year next year. Because I just don't see it. Sure. Anyway, War Eagle guys.
Appreciate it, Lonnie. Always appreciate you calling in, listening as well. 334-321-1390. And I get his point, right? I totally understand his point of view there. And I think we had mentioned that he had texted yesterday. So I think we got that in there yesterday, but glad he called back again today. I get what he's saying, right? If you take the position of head coach away from Hugh Freeze, or even if you don't take the position of head coach away from him, but you take basically play calling and offensive coordinator duties away from him, which there's an argument that that should have already happened, and there's no secret on who's calling plays, right? If you take that away from him and you do go find a new offensive coordinator because what's working or what you have as a collective collection is not working, clearly, right? So you go and try to find the biggest and best offensive coordinator in the country. And to Lonnie's point, he's worried that nobody would take the job because you're trying to come in and fix a major issue on a very limited time span.
And then if it doesn't work, your name is on the chopping block. Your name is the one to blame.
I would like to think, though, that if that's the case, if that's the situation, which gets us back to kind of the gray area of where Auburn football is, trying to figure out what the next steps are, I would like to think that if Auburn decides to change the duties and roles of Hugh Freeze, whether that's as the head coach or a different thing like a GM, CEO type of thing, and you do go bring in a new offensive mind, I would like to think that 12 months is not what they would get. I would like to think that they would be given more than a year, right? Because if you're changing what Hugh Freeze is doing or what he's not doing, then doesn't that buy him a little bit more time? Wouldn't that also buy a new hire on the offensive side of the football a little bit more time too, in terms of recruiting and game planning and scheming and coaching and development, right? Wouldn't they get a little bit more time than that? I would hope so, because if Lonnie's situation plays out where you go get somebody and it's like, all right, you got a year, good luck. Yeah, he's absolutely right. Nobody takes that job unless you're just out to get a paycheck, which, I mean, good for you in today's era, I guess. But it gets to the idea of what he was alluding to with people who called in yesterday and texted in, or even the ones that didn't, that feel this way of they don't want to go through the coaching search again. They don't want to go through another cycle of, well, we could hire this guy, or we could hire this guy, or could it be this guy? I mean, lists have already started, right? And I'm total in agreeance with that idea that coaching searches are long, stressful, exhausting. And when's the last time Auburn made a hire where most of the fan base said, yep, that's it, that's the one? That it's impossible to please everybody.
And those words that you used, that was just from our show and content purposes. I can only imagine the actual legitimate searches and the interviews that are going on. I mean, it makes for fun-ish conversations, but then it also, you have to deal with the results of whoever came in to be with that current head coach, and then the roster reform and everything like that. I mean, it is. It's a very long out, or very long, drawn out, dramatic change that occurs. And yeah, I mean, you feel like that's relatively where a majority of the fan base is at. Is if you're not, it goes back to the very first segment that we had of the gray area, but there's something. Everybody has the idea of something that needs to change, whether that's something small, whether that's something big, but at the bare minimum, something either has to give or something has to be taken away.
And my verdict is still out on the idea of DJ Durkin, right, as the head coach. If a change is made, I'm still not sold on DJ Durkin, A, because I'll just be honest with you, I don't know if he wants it. I don't know if he wants to be a head coach again. He was 10-15 at Maryland in his 2 years there. And a lot of things happened during his tenure there, just, I mean, being honest, right? And so for a guy that's making $2.5 million a year, and I genuinely think he's the best defensive coordinator in the country, why would you want to be a head coach? Unless you just have that drive and you have that passion and you have the want to be a coach, to be a leader of the entire team and be the face of the program and do the press conferences and do all the recruiting and get paid 3-4 times the amount of money you're making. If that's your dream, then cool. But if he was going to do that, wouldn't he have already done it? It's kind of where I'm at with him. Now, I could be completely wrong. I'm not friends with him. I don't know him like that. Could be completely wrong. But I just feel like he's best as a defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And he's a damn good one. And that's what I would want him to be for Auburn moving. I hope DJ Durkin's Auburn's defensive coordinator till I die, because he's that good. He's that awesome.
Well, it brings back the exact conversations that we had in the off season and working your way into the regular season of how I think that, and I think you're in the same boats, of I think the head coaching title will begin losing a little bit of value in the college football world. I really do. And I think it's just because you see so many different people, Gus Malzahn, call him the pioneer, if you will, of being kind of the first one to step away from the head coaching duties of, man, I don't want to deal with that side of the football. I don't want to deal with the overall responsibilities of having to recruit, having to make plays, having to play call, having to work on both sides of the sideline in practice and make sure that I can focus on these guys while also making sure that I can make sure that my offense is competent. You're seeing more and more guys begin to take that step down, if you will. And again, the market value is still not worth complaining about if you're taking that step down. But again, I'm in the opinion, I think the head coaching title, minus the ego factor or minus just the pride factor of wanting to be the best at the highest position, you're going to see a lot more of those GM roles, and you're going to see a little bit more value in being the best offensive coordinator, the best defensive coordinator, and making a little bit more than the average does, not making what the head coach does right now, but I think you could slowly see that number start to drift.
Well, that's going to be the thing, is these organizations, these college football teams are going to have to make that change financially,
yeah,
because until the salaries go down, that idea will not play out.
No.
Because why would you
why
give
make
up,
five when I can make 10?
Yeah. Why would you give up the opportunity to be a fired head coach and make $55 million? It's the best profession in the world.
It's risk-free.
Literally. If you win, cool. You'll get extensions. You'll be successful. You'll be praised, and you'll live your best life. If you fail, we'll pay you anyways. Welcome to coaching in college football in 2025. 334-321-1390. Spectre, what's going on, my man? You're on the line on this Tuesday afternoon.
Well, I'm just now checking in with you guys. I've heard a little bit of the conversation. But, our expectations over the years is not, you know, if we win a championship, we win a championship. But Auburn fans, for the most part, just are looking for winning seasons. You know, we would settle. Absolutely. I mean, I've seen it in the past. We settle for 9 wins, 10 wins a season, and a New Year's Eve bowl. I mean, that's our piece of pie right there. If we win a national championship, oh, yeah, that's even better. That's icing on the cake. But, you know, hadn't we already been through a couple of coordinators under Hugh Freeze?
On which side? Well, Durkin's been here since Freeze, right? And then Derek Nix got brought in with Freeze because they've worked together forever.
No, I'm talking offensive coordinator. We had Montgomery last year, didn't we?
Was that last year? I'm trying to rattle my brain. Maybe so.
Remember.
Either way, I mean, Auburn's been through coordinators no matter who the head coach is. I mean, look at all the different offensive coordinators that Auburn's been through just in general, Specter.
I mean, it was like a deck of cards with Miles on. You know, I'm going to run the show. No, I'm going to hand it off to the coordinator. No, I'm going to take it back.
So Philip Montgomery was 2023, I believe, and then Nix came in 2024. So this is his second year with Derek Nix.
Yeah. So it doesn't seem to be the coordinator doesn't seem to be the answer to our problems. And you know what the answer to our problems is? You know, we got a guy that thought he was still in the game, but now he's not in the game anymore. We're going to have to make the change sooner or later. If we're putting this off for another year, we're already doing 2023 over again. I mean, look at the schedule in 2023. It's identical to what we're doing now. We're going to win another 2 games, and that'll be it. Just like in 2023.
Where Auburn went 6-7 on the year.
We'll win Kentucky. We'll win Mercer. We're going to lose to Alabama and Vanderbilt.
So, Spectre, you're on the side of ripping the Band-Aid.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we're going to do it anyway. I mean, I'm tired of hearing we're close. We're close to what? Close to losing you? You know, what?
Yeah.
I don't know what we're close to. Well, we're close to losing another game. We're close to having another losing season.
Yeah, you're definitely close to that.
Yeah. So I'm a wit's end with this. I mean, get it done. Get it done.
There you go. Thanks, Spector. Appreciate the call, man. Always appreciate you listening and calling in as well. 334-321-1390. Auburn's definitely close to having another losing season because you're 500 as it stands right now. You're 500 with Kentucky, Vanderbilt, Mercer, and Alabama left on the schedule. Auburn's last successful football season was 2019, where you went 9-4. Before that, you were 8-5 in 2018. Before that, you were 10-4. Then 8-5, going backwards. 7-6 in 2015. 8-5, 2014. 12-2 in 2013 when you played for a national title. Auburn has not won more than six games since the year 2019. Think about that. And that's a 2019 season that I consider good, but not great, but yet you still went 9-4. So to Spector's point, as we get to break before we get to John and Auburn, has Auburn just accepted mediocrity, right? We talked about that yesterday. Here's what you've done since that 2019 season. 6-5, 6-7, 5-7, 6-7, 5-7, 4-4 so far. Like, man, there's no other way to describe it than you're in your Tennessee era. That's what I've said. You're in your Tennessee era. You're talking three different coaches, the end of the Malzahn era, the Harsin era, and whatever this Hugh Freeze era is. And you just can't seem to get it right. You rotate through coordinators. You pay a bunch of dudes not to work here. And nobody seems to have the answer. So Spector's in the camp of rip the Band-Aid off and move on. We'll see what John and Auburn thinks when we come back. Phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We get back to the phone lines right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Let's get back to the phone lines, 334-321-1390. John and Auburn, you're on the line. We appreciate you holding on through the break. What's going on?
Hey, you guys, happy Tuesday. So my thoughts on this Auburn situation that we're in is the 2026 schedule for Auburn is just, It seems an impossible task.
Yeah,
it's brutal.
So I think that would be difficult to hop a first-year coach into. And I don't know a lot of first-year coaches that would want that, given Auburn's recent history at the position. So you could make a move right now. There's obviously a lot of moving parts there. I don't know what you're getting. And my thought would be to use any money you would use toward a buyout or anything and poach some of these rosters. Go after Florida's roster. Go after LSU's roster. See if you can't get a stronger roster. And if 26 doesn't work, make a move then. I will say, if Auburn makes a move now, you know, Auburn would probably have to go off the board, maybe a Jamie Chadwell, who, you know, what happened to him? He was the top G5 coach a year or two ago, and now Nobody wants him. Or maybe David Shaw, who used to be at Stanford and is, I think, the Lions offensive coordinator. I really feel like Auburn would have to go off the board to get a name that would be attractive to the powers that be and even to the run-of-the-mill fan. What do y'all think?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. And the 2026 schedule keeps getting brought up, and for good reason, John, because you have the Baylor game, which is now in Atlanta. You've got Southern Miss and Jacksonville State at home at Jordan-Hare. And then we don't know how these games stack up, but we know that Auburn will go to Alabama, to Georgia, to Mississippi State, to Ole Miss, and to Tennessee, and they'll host Arkansas, Florida, LSU, and Vanderbilt. Like, that schedule is ridiculous no matter how it gets stacked up. My question to you, and more of an open question to the Auburn fan base, would be this. Are you more confident and a brand new head coach, coaching staff, and team to get through that 2026 schedule, or Hugh Freeze and this staff and whatever the leftovers of this team to get through that 2026 schedule?
No, that's a very fair question. You know, the one thing I'll say is a lot of people say there's a process. It takes time, and I know this is a program that has more money than Auburn. Look at what A&M has done. A&M, you know, paid out the highest buyout in college football history, and it hasn't really stopped their growth. One more quick point I'll make. Never in the history of the SEC has a coach coached at three different SEC schools. You might see it happen twice this offseason with Kiffin and if Dan Mullen comes back to the conference.
Yeah.
But thank you, guys.
Appreciate it, John. Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390. How about that stat?
It's wild. And we're about to get to some more stats about coaches being fired and the number of coaches that have now been fired before the end of October. I mean, it feels like they're dropping like flies just about every single week. Another thing, too, that we talked a little bit about off-air yesterday and partially relates to the conversation at hand is just, man, if you're looking at the college football expansion, I mean, how many of these guys are going to be comfortable in their roles that they're at right now just based off of if the ACC now, instead of getting one or two, if they can be guaranteed three, maybe four spots in the playoff versus some of these other teams, or, you know, where Auburn is at right now, if they're trying to race for the fourth best team in the conference to make a college football playoff, I mean, how much more of a risk is that versus a team and a program that doesn't really feel the pressure like some of these other teams? Like, I know Louisville has been kind of compared of, man, well, if Brohm comes to Auburn, or it's in conversations, why would he? Just because of what the program expects at LSU, or at Louisville, rather than what it would at Auburn.
Teams like Louisville are winning football games. Georgia Tech are winning football games. And Auburn's still struggling, trying to find the right guy, and whether the one in place is him or not. Those are the conversations. But some of these schools have already had that conversation. They've already made that decision. We talk big results in college football and coaches who have already moved on. That's coming up next.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. And lots going on around college football. And yes, there's a lot happening with Auburn, and there's a lot of conversations on what the next steps are, and was it a good win versus Arkansas? What happens this weekend against Kentucky, and yada, yada, yada. But we do need to look around the other things that are going on, the other scores from the weekend, the coaches who have been fired, and what in the world the college football playoff picture looks like. So, Christian, where do you want to start? I think it's appropriate to at least go with some of the results from the weekend.
Sure, yeah.
And then kind of branch out from there. And so I'll toss it to you. What stands out from this past weekend across college football in terms of final results?
Oh, you're looking at another tier in the SEC continuing to fill its way out. I know that you weren't buying stock. I had stock bought in Marcel Reed and Texas A&M over LSU. They went at 49-25. I guess, again, before we dive into this, again, our playoff or our 10 predictions was three games back. I'm gonna completely give you your honest thought for this, or your honest feedback. On here, I was 6-4 last week. You went 5-5. Did you have a two-game lead before the season or before this week, or is it two games now?
It's two games now. I was up by three.
Okay.
Yeah.
When I was looking it on here, I had 57-32, where you would have only – you had one less game, and I didn't remember if I did it wrong for
pretty
the
sure
side.
I was up by three. This week would make it up by two.
I believe that is right as well, but I wanted to give you the win rather than the loss. So
yeah.
you went 5-5 last week. I went 6-4.
Not great.
So slowly chipping away.
Not great.
56-34 to 58-32. Still relatively
not bad.
Solid records.
Yeah, not bad.
Considering the games that we pick are not simple, who do you want to win in this 28.5-point game? I mean, this is, we pick games that are usually 10 points or less, and we both picked a couple of big-time upsets last week. Unfortunately for you, fortunately for me, A&M was not one of them.
I think I'm just a hater. I think I'm just an A&M hater because, like, they look so good now.
Yeah.
Like, they 49-25 on the road at night in Baton Rouge is no joke. That's not false. You can't fake that.
No. And Marcel Reed showed a little bit more of that last year athleticism. Again, hasn't needed to run the football because of his pocket presence that they were trying to establish more of in year two with Marcel Reed, but also, excuse me, the running backs, with one of them, with Le'Veon Moss being hurt, Marcel Reed had a little bit more freedom, I think, in the offense. 13 carries, 108 yards, and 2 touchdowns. I mean, he shows that he is one of the top quarterbacks in the conference.
I don't care. I'm sticking to it. I'm a Texas A&M hater. You want to know why? I don't care that they're 8-0. I don't care that you broke your elbow. Most people won't get that.
I was hoping that you weren't.
I don't care, okay? Texas A&M, here's their resume. Are you ready for this? UTSA, Utah State. Fine. That's your non-conference wins, whatever. On the road at Notre Dame for a night game. It's a good win. It's a really good win.
Getting better.
Notre Dame, I told you, they're going to make the playoff. They're going to win out. They're going to make the playoff after losing 2 games. I don't agree with it, but it's how it's going to go down, okay? So,
I mean, they're the 12th ranked team in the country. With Boston College, Navy, Pitt, Syracuse, and Stanford.
That's an even worse situation. Gross. But that's a good win to go on the road and beat Notre Dame. I will give you that. Home win versus Auburn by 6 points, that's not a good win.
It's a great win.
When
you're looking at the...
It's not a good win. Home against Mississippi State, I know the Dogs have gotten better, but I'm not giving you credit for that because everybody's still beating them. I want you to get this. After that, they beat Florida, Arkansas, and LSU all in a row. What do those 3 teams have in common? What do those 3 teams that A&M beat in a row have in common? Florida, Arkansas, and LSU. Oh, that's right.
Texas A&M broke all 3 of them.
They've all fired their head coach. I'm not giving you credit for winning those games. Florida sucks.
Cat in the hat?
Fired. Yeah, yeah. Arkansas sucks. And LSU clearly is not what they were supposed to be. So, yeah, I'm a hater. Call me one. I don't care. I'm not buying Texas A&M. They go on the road to Missouri this weekend. That's a good game. They'll probably win. But Missouri is good, not great, in my opinion. Are they a playoff team? No. South Carolina? Bad. Texas? Shouldn't be ranked. But they are. Texas is, they're not a playoff team either. Texas A&M is going to have one victory on their schedule over a playoff team this year, and it's Notre Dame, and even that is debatable. Think about that for a moment. That's why I'm a Texas A&M hater. Georgia, no Bama, none of that. They don't have to play Vandy, which is crazy to say.
Credit to them, though, not that we're planning on spending this entire segment on Texas A&M, but
I might,
for avoiding the slip-up game. You feel like they have one, if not two, of every single year. And it's, you avoid those. You go 10-2, 11-1. This could be the year that, again, you just beat the teams that are on the schedule. We continue on. You only went 5-5, but you placed a little marker on a game that you haven't placed it in a while.
Yeah, I would break it out for special occasions, and it was
your pocket aces.
Vanderbilt, baby. Yes.
Who would have thought that 3 years ago when the JG guarantee was left and right that it would be saved for about a year?
Yeah.
And it would be used once again on Diego Pavia and the Vanderbilt Commodores, and Mr. Jacob Goins comes half a yard away with his JG guarantee.
Hey, it don't matter how it happens. It just matters that it happened. Vanderbilt beats Missouri 17-10. I was stressing, no doubt,
But what a win for Vanderbilt. Because Missouri is a solid team. Are they playoff worthy? No. But they're a top 15 team, or they were. They're still a top 20 team, right? That's another big win for Vanderbilt, who is well on their way, Christian. Well on their way to making the college football playoff.
Their one loss was on the road at Alabama by two scores, where Diego Pavia had two red zone turnovers. It's the one loss. And that game right there, although the score isn't as pretty, only 17-10, I think this was a 3-3 game at halftime, is pretty dang impressive when you look at it. It goes to show you, we talk a lot about it, talking about Auburn High, talking about Lee Scott, and just kind of the teams as a whole of finding multiple ways to win a football game. This Vanderbilt team, if they need to, they can go put up 31 points on LSU. They can go put up 44 points on Virginia Tech or 31 on South Carolina. They can put points on the board, but over the past couple of weeks, they've found ways to get stops on the defensive side of things as well. And to hold a Missouri team who, yes, was without Bo Prabula for a majority of the second half, found a way to get it done. And now Vanderbilt is the ninth-ranked team in the country. They go to Austin to take on the Texas Longhorns. The 11 o'clock game on ABC. Texas is only a point-and-a-half favorite in that contest. And speaking of the Texas Longhorns, man, someone was so confident in Mississippi State and about halfway halfway through the third quarter, I was starting to get on board. But I said it. Texas was going to not – they weren't going to cover, but they were going to find a way to win. And I think that's what you can give them credit for doing.
God, Mississippi State. I looked like a freaking genius for so long. And you know what? I know I took the loss because Mississippi State took the loss. But, I mean – that was a pretty good performance by Mississippi State. They're not good, but they're playing okay. You had chances to beat Tennessee,
they can score.
Florida, yeah, and Texas, and you just couldn't do it. Those are heartbreakers, man. Those are such heartbreakers for Mississippi State in games that you desperately needed because of what your schedule holds. All right, they go to Arkansas this weekend. That could be a fun one. And then host Georgia, go to Missouri, and host Ole Miss for the Egg Bowl.
Arkansas is going to get one.
Yeah.
You have to feel like they're going to accidentally outscore a team and get one.
It's like
them.
Accidentally running into a fastball where you just keep swinging and eventually you're going to find one.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does Arkansas have left? State, LSU, Texas, and Missouri. Yeah. Either this weekend or in Austin.
I was going to say, they'll find a way to beat Texas.
In Austin? Heck yeah.
And then that'll make the Texas A&M game that much more exciting because Texas will then show up to play spoiler on A&M. Who would have believed that?
Yeah. Mississippi State broke my heart, man. That one hurt. You give up 24 points in the fourth quarter. Sorry, man. That's tough. That's tough. And I guess Texas stays alive?
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess.
Despite all of the NFL conversations with Steve Sarkisian, I did not have conversations with any NFL teams.
Can we move to the Big Ten? Can we move to the Big Ten, please?
First, Ole Miss, playoff lock.
Yeah.
Despite everything.
Yeah.
7-1. Your one loss was to Georgia. We talked about it. You split those games with Georgia and Oklahoma. You're in the college football playoff, and they did that.
Wasn't pretty, but they got it done.
And very easily could have beat Georgia as well. They have South Carolina, where they're a two-touchdown favorite, the Citadel, Florida, and Mississippi State. That's the game that Mississippi State's going to find a way to win.
You do have to go to Stark Vegas. That is on... That is not Thanksgiving night.
It's no longer the Thanksgiving night. That is Black Friday, like the noon game.
No, yeah, 11 a.m. Yeah, not even Black Friday night. It is.
Golly, that is disgusting.
You know what game is Black Friday night? Indiana Purdue. Gross.
Just like the good Lord intended.
That's, yeah, unfortunate.
Well, real fast, the game before we dive into the Big Ten, Memphis finds a way to beat South Florida. That's big for the group of five picture just because Memphis now has a win over Arkansas and now South Florida, who was the favorite, is Memphis now a G5 lock for the playoff, or a South Florida Still the favorite. I think South Florida still has better wins
snore
on their schedule. BYU is the Big 12 favorites by far.
That's unfortunate.
Iowa State, really, really good. Rocco Beck, really, really good. That was another one that we were split on. Barrett Bachmeier is really, really good.
I was looking good there with Iowa State for a while. They jumped on BYU early.
Oh, yeah. And from the early slate on to about six, you had a commanding lead.
Was on a heater.
We sat there and we were like, all right, you could go 5-5 or you could go 8-2.
Yeah, I was on a heater.
I was like, I could go 4-6 or 6-4, and it flipped very much.
If you look at the Big 12, though, Cincinnati, my Bearcats, baby. Bearcats got it done. Baylor has just fallen off the face of the earth, and Cincinnati's just a really good football team. If you haven't bought stock already in the Bearcats, it may be too late, but you do it anyway. Cincinnati's awesome.
Well, before we dive into a quick playoff picture with the teams projected by each conference, the Wild Big Ten.
Washington, baby. Washington, baby. They're alive. Barely, but they're alive. 6-2 on the year. 3-2 in Big Ten play. They have a chance to get a playoff win or a resume-building win with Oregon at the end of the season. How about the Huskies? 42-25 over Illinois. That was a big win for them. Indiana keeps rolling.
How wild is it that Oregon's just so good nobody's talking about only a 21-7 win?
Yeah.
It was just simply a... survived.
Well, Wisconsin's just so bad.
They are.
They're so bad.
It was genuine. Oregon might have run the ball to the left, run the ball to the right. Dante Moore was 9-15.
Yeah, I mean, and they're gonna have a chance to win out. I mean, that the Oregon Ducks are good. Indiana's good. Ohio State may have been off this weekend. And
Ohio State was.
Yeah, they were off. And so, yeah, Big Ten is very top heavy. Big 12's chaotic. SEC's chaotic, and that's where you start looking. Had a playoff picture.
Yeah. Again, real quickly before we hit our final break, just looking at the teams projected by conference to make the playoff. And again, all of this is based off of the whatever ESPN All-State playoff projector or whatever the case may be. But these are teams that are listed to make the 12 teams, make the 12-team playoff as of right now. There's one in the Big 12, BYU. There are two in the ACC, Miami, and a really good Georgia Tech team who's not just going – I say not going to outscore you when they put as many points on the board as they do, but is probably one of the two, if not three, teams in college football. Georgia Tech's kind of like Vanderbilt. Well, they're perfectly fine playing a 24-21 type of game.
Yeah.
And love it and feel that they're going to be able to execute 3 yards in a cloud of dust better than anybody. So BYU in the Big 12, Miami and Georgia Tech in the ACC. You have three currently in the Big 10. You have Ohio State, Indiana, and Oregon. You have your independent of Notre Dame. You still have the G5 team of South Florida, who is the projected favorite for the G5. That win over Florida looms large, but we'll see how big of a win that ends up looking like later on in the season. That leaves eight. So four spots right now for the SEC, and all four of these teams have a 70% chance to make the playoff or higher, and that is Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia, and Ole Miss.
With two or three teams on the outside looking in who still control their own destiny.
Yeah, Missouri wants to have a say. Texas wants to have a say. Vanderbilt wants to have a say. But if so, it's wild to think, because who's the team either from the SEC or who's the team from the other conference that gets left out if another team from the SEC wants to have a say?
Yeah, I mean, I think it ends up being a Big 12 or a Big 10 team that gets left out if the SEC starts stealing bids, because the SEC teams are going to have better resumes. And
if Miami loses another one, a 10-2 SEC team should get in over a 10-2 Miami team.
I think a 9-3 SEC team should get in over a 10-2 ACC team. That conference sucks. That conference terrible.
Which goes back to even more of the factor of, you win the conference and you're automatically in, what chaos that could bring. By, say, Miami does go 9-3, but beats Georgia Tech in the ACC championship and both of those teams get in, now all of a sudden you're having to kick an SEC team out of what would be a playoff bid.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, man. SEC is the SEC is going to get the most teams in. It's just whether all the deserving teams get in or not, I think, is what that's going to come down to. So lots more to figure out in terms of the college football playoff. Thankfully, we got another month of football to settle it all out. So we'll take our final break here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Come back and wrap it up on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. We appreciate everybody being with us today, but a great show. We've covered a lot in the last couple of hours. We've talked more Auburn-Arkansas, talked about what the future holds for Auburn and what direction they may or may not go. Also had a good conversation with Lee Scott Academy's head football coach, Buster Daniel, as the Warriors get ready to wrap up the regular season this Friday. It gets real town before they head to the playoffs next week. And we've talked a lot about Auburn coaching and other coaching and other games and results and who's real, who's not, who's in, who's out of the college football playoff right now. And so if you missed any of today's show, you can go back and listen to the podcast version of it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. And coming up on tomorrow's show, it's Wednesday, which means we will talk with our man Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, get some updates from Athens, talk about Georgia football, Georgia basketball, and beyond. Maybe talk some more about this coaching carousel stuff and what's going on, and start to flip the page for Auburn and Kentucky this weekend. So that'll be on the show tomorrow. But man, while we got a couple of minutes, how about last night?
Whew.
How about the World Series last night?
You watched all 18 innings.
You stayed up for it. I watched
both baseball games.
I did not. I did not. I was watching it downstairs. I was going to watch the full 9 innings, and I did. And when it went to extras, I said, all right, I'm going up to lay down and watch it.
False,
and
you left in the 8th.
That was... No, it's not true. I watched the whole 9th inning. I watched it go to extras.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's right, because we made the joke, and it was like, oh, well, it's the top 8 right now, and
yeah,
we need to go to bed, but it'll be fine. Then we made the joke of, it's going to be midnight in the top of the 13th, and little did we know.
18 innings, so
there
yes.
were 5 runs apiece scored by each team in 7 innings. You then played another full baseball game of no runs.
Incredible. And some of the defensive plays were just marvelous.
Some were marvelous. Some were questionable, but halfway understandable. I know your biggest one was the send with Vladdy Jr.
Yes.
In the on-deck circle. I don't even remember what inning that was.
that
might have been the 10th or the 11th.
Yeah, something like that.
But you had, I mean, so many heroes make so many names in that game. I mean, Will Klein, the dude that was signed like 4 days ago.
Yep.
4 innings, 1 hit. 5 Ks, had never thrown more than 34 pitches, through 72 in Game 2 of the World Series.
Then Freddie walks it off.
Yeah, Shohei Ohtani reaches base 9 times.
Who pitches tonight?
And now is the starter.
That game right here on ESPN 106.7, Dodgers or Blue Jays tonight?
Dodgers.
Yeah.
Well, Blue Jays are in a better spot with their rotation, but Shohei can just give them 8.
Yep, Dodgers up 2-1. That game tonight
Dodgers
here
6.
On ESPN 106.7. We're back tomorrow, 2-4, on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.